Welcome to Plastic Model Mojo, a podcast dedicated to scale modeling, as well as the news and events around the hobby. Let's join Mike and Kentucky Dave as they strive to be informative, entertaining, and help you keep your modeling mojo alive.
Kentucky Dave, you ready for 112?
Yes, I am. I am way ready for 112. How about you?
Yeah, man, let's have some fun. We're going to blast off with Real Spaces, our special topic tonight. And we'll get to that in a little while. Until then, my friend, what is up in your model sphere?
My model sphere is revolving all around the fact that you and I are making a run for the border. We've got HeritageCon coming up this weekend. In fact, when many people will be listening to this episode, you and I will probably be driving on the road to Hamilton. Hopefully we can do a couple of Facebook Lives from while we're road tripping. But everything right now is revolving around getting prepped to go to HeritageCon. And I got to tell you that I was talking to Jim Bates this afternoon, and I was telling him that the buzz that I feel from getting ready to go to HeritageCon is exactly the way I feel for the week or two before the Nationals. So this is going to be great. I can't wait.
Well, good.
How about you? What's up in your model sphere?
Well, I had it split up with that second. I got a couple things. I'll start with that one. I'm also prepping for our trip to Hamilton and HeritageCon. I got my day off lined up on the Monday following.
Yep.
The rental car is lined up. Our departure time's worked out.
Have you figured out where we're going to stop to add me as a driver?
Nah, we got lots of options. We can do that on the fly.
All right.
I got my registration complete.
Yep.
We got some stuff to haul up there, so the tote of accumulation is starting to fill up.
Oh, yes. Yep. I'm doing the exact same thing. I'm getting everything gathered in one place to load it into the car.
And getting the modeling fluids and all our barters together to take up to our friends. And it's coming together, man. I think it was somebody said today, it was Chris Sieber, Lufram, only six sleeps left.
Yes, that's right.
Almost five.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that I'm going to be doing a lot of sleeping that last night, man. I'm jazzed.
Well, in addition to that, I probably edited out the hiccup, but in the last episode while we were recording, there was one more something, listener mail or comment I was trying to find, and I couldn't, so we left it out, but I finally rediscovered it. It was actually on the podcast Facebook page, not on the group. Because it had been posted as a response to one of our teaser graphics.
Right.
Eric Curvina had a comment after episode 110. Now, 110 was the last time we did the Wheel of Accidental Wisdom.
Yep.
And he experienced some distress with our new wheel sound effect because it didn't play nice with his bone conduction headphones. And I just want to say that made me think of Cousin Eddie's comment in Christmas Vacation about the steel plate in the microwave.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, that's not going to be the final wheel sound. I'm still looking for the ideal one. That one's a little treble heavy. I'm not real fan of that one either. So hopefully we won't rattle your brain anymore. Other than that, Dave, that is what's up in my model sphere. So we'll keep on tracking toward our Saturday morning departure.
Yep.
And go from there.
Now, since we're recording, I'm sure by now people know that you got to have a modeling fluid in hand. Do you have one?
I do. It's a St. Paddy's Day leftover. I'm trying to put the polish on a couple of Guinness that were left in the fridge after we did some Irish cooking and stuff last night.
My wife had one Sunday night, and her comment when she finished it was, man, that was really good. She used to drink Guinness on the regular and had gotten away from it. And I think that reminded her how good a beer that was.
What about you?
Well, I have Sweetwater Brewing Company's Extra Pale Ale 420. And believe it or not, I don't think I've ever had this before. And it's a really common, quote unquote, microbrew. It's got some hop to it, but it's not awful. We'll see if this gets me through the entire episode.
Well, we can't get through a couple of weeks without some listener mail.
No, we should have a lot.
I wouldn't say a lot, but we've got a decent amount, and I think you might be going to try to get caught up on some of the Facebook DMs we've gotten over the last, going on a month now. But
I had to pick and choose.
Well, good. First up for us is Mr. Jake McKee, and Jake is in the Austin, Texas vicinity, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And Jake sent in three topics because he enjoyed our reformatted Wheel of Accidental Wisdom to bring that up again, and he wanted to throw some in the hopper. And three good suggestions. I'll work these into the next wheel, Jake, and we'll go from there. I also want to mention that Jake's going to be an up-and-coming guest here as soon as we can get him worked into the schedule. So, Jake, I haven't forgot about you, and we'll be in touch and get you on the show to talk about some of the things you got going on. Up next is Scott Huber from State College, Pennsylvania.
Go Nittany Lions!
I think he and a couple other people are showing some interest in our to-be-scheduled, but certainly planned model car episode, automotive modeling.
Yeah.
That's something else we haven't covered.
Yep. And we've been planning on it for a while, but then it just keeps getting away from us.
It does. And that's probably getting inexcusable at this point. So we're going to try to rectify that. Now, he's got some suggestions about maybe how to approach this, which we do appreciate. I'll speak in generalities. He hopes that we cover this kind of more broadly than kind of the Americana that kind of dominates scale model cars, at least in the United States.
Sure.
You know, a lot of, you know, 60s muscle cars and stuff like that. But
right.
There's a whole lot more to it. There's a lot of Alpine racers, Formula One, all that all over the world, rally cars, motorcycles, non-American car makes that are popular with some people, Japanese and European models and things like that. And, you know, he finishes by saying that to me, a Zero is a fabulous thing, but its existence is rooted in all those great Tamiya motorcycle kits of the late 70s.
Well, you know what? That is obviously true. If those Tamiya motorcycle kits were not as popular as they were, Tamiya wouldn't have been cranking out the Zeros in the 2000s. So I'm happy for Tamiya when they're producing a model kit, whether it's a 72nd scale aircraft or a car or a motorcycle.
Up next is Lee Edmonds. Lee is from Australia. I can't remember exactly where. I could probably dig in the email and find out, but I failed to do that. Anyway, Lee was in the United States, and he did drop by a nice hobby shop in Las Vegas. And he'd also arranged to meet Jim Bates in Seattle, but some other plans got in the way, and he hopes to be back and take Jim up on that the next time. And he sent a picture in. It's pretty basic. It's Lee sitting behind a very big bottle of Bullet Rye.
Not a bad choice.
And he asked if he looks happy. Well, yes, you do. He's never seen such a big bottle of Bullet, and he'd have to mortgage his house in Australia to be able to afford it. No wonder his main modeling fluid is Pepsi. Well, that's probably all right, too.
Yeah.
Now, here's one we need to consider, and it's come up once before by another listener. Alan Tackett from kind of the Central Florida area brings it up again, Dave. He's a member of the Polk Area Model Society here in Central Florida, and he happens to be the club president, and he thought maybe how to run a club might be a good show topic.
That would be a good show topic.
You know, because we've got a successful club, and there's plenty of others out there to varying degrees, but some of the very successful clubs, he's been at it for 7 years now. Says there's a learning curve, but they've got a healthy and vibrant club that runs both a swap meet and a successful one-day show every year in Florida.
That's great. Yes, no, that's mark that down. That is a good topic for future episode. In fact, you know what? We might get John Figueroa, the director of local chapters from IPMS USA, on to talk about that. That might be a good conversation.
It might be. And he closes by saying he will be in Kentucky in October. And he'd love to meet up. So I talked to him a little bit more about that. He's going to be at the big equipment and machinery show out at the fairgrounds in October.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
So he's going to be in your town.
Yep. We will definitely have to meet up. He definitely has to go to Scale Reproductions We want to meet up with you, but the one thing you really don't want to miss is going to Scale Reproductions Hobby Shop.
We could kill two birds with one stone and meet him there first.
There you go. And just go down the street for lunch.
Well, that's a good segue because J.W. Keenum from Rineyville, Kentucky, and I have no idea where that is.
I know exactly where Rineyville is.
Well, where is it, Dave?
Oh, God, hang on. I've been through it. Crap. Now you're going to make me look.
Well, I could look.
But I've been there. I know I have.
Well, apparently you don't know exactly where it is.
Hardin County. It's near Elizabethtown.
Okay. So not too far down the road from you.
No.
Well, he made the trip up from Rineyville to Louisville last Saturday and happened to visit Scale Reproductions. Says the place was busy and the staff was friendly. Even though the shop was busy, they stopped and asked him if he needed help with anything. He ended up buying some paints. His wife found a good pair of tweezers. She makes jewelry. And when he checked out, he told him he'd heard about the shop from us. So definitely plan another visit.
Good.
And then over by the mall, he found a rather large modeling fluid store.
Yes. Yes, he did. Although I don't think they call it the modeling fluid store. Although, you know what? They should.
They probably should. Well, JW, thanks a lot. And Scale Reproductions is, as I like to call it now, is the official local hobby store of Plastic Model Mojo.
Absolutely.
There you go, Brian. And finally, Dave, from the listener mail email side of things, Jim Unger from Northwood Scale Model Fanatics, Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Okay, I was going to ask where they were.
Well, they've got a model show coming up he'd like us to pitch.
Okay.
And we're out in front of it, but not too much. May 18th.
Yeah, that'll be here before you know it.
The Eagle River Derby Track Convention Hall. And he gave us a flyer, so I'll put the flyer up on the dojo. But it's May 18th in Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Cool. I wonder how far that is from Madison.
That's a good question. We'll have to ask Steve.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, that is it from the email side of things over the last 2 weeks. Now, you took a hiatus from the DMs last week to do something different. So
yes, I did. So I've got plenty of DMs. I have curated it down so that we're not spending too much time. First, Frank Blanton from Henrico, Virginia, DM'd in. He bought one of the shirts from the merch store because his Amps chapter has a modeling retreat. And he wanted to wear that for the modeling retreat. And it turns out that Frank and I grew up in Richmond, Virginia for a number of years. And where I used to live is not that far from where Frank is. So I hope he should have the shirt soon. I hope he likes it. And when you go on your modeling retreat, Frank, please send us a picture. Post it in the dojo of you and your shirt. Next up, we've got the Facebook account is Wabi Sabi Modeler. I have no idea, or models. I have no idea who that is. But this person heard you talk about one of your long-term projects, the Werfer on the back of, in your case, I believe it was the Maltier, right?
Yes, that's right.
And this person had previously done the same launcher for a project, and he came to the same conclusion you did, that the kit ones are not very good. So he scratch built that launcher and actually was willing to part with the launcher part to send it to you if you wanted it. So I thought that was extremely generous. Apparently, it's a finished model in his case, and I don't know if he's tired of looking at it or what, but he actually offered to send you the launcher.
Well, I'll get to that project one of these days, but I got a feeling it's going to get undercut by a new release at some point.
Well, but it won't until you start the model and get halfway through the scratch build. Oh. And then the perfect kit will get released.
Which won't be perfect.
Right. Another DM we got, and again, no name. This Facebook page is Bad Fit Models. I know they're in the UK because he DM'd to say that he had gotten approval from the IPMS UK Nationals, the big Telford show. He's doing a special trophy for creative, inventive bonkers. And he's doing the award as a 3D print. And it looks like a set of intermeshing gears. And he sent us a or DM'd us a picture. Just simply wanted to tell us that that he had enjoyed some of the recent episodes and some of the variety of what we had talked about, and sent along that picture.
Cool.
Next is Robert Yalden, who I'm assuming is in the United States military because he says he's stationed in Wiesbaden, Germany. Notice how I got that correct and said Wiesbaden. He had was listening to the episode that we just previously did on those Freddy Flypogger monster kits. And he was writing in to note kind of what you and I noted. We went into that episode without necessarily a whole lot of expectations or without a lot of involvement in that particular aspect of the hobby. But Robert wrote in to tell us how much he enjoyed it and found it interesting, even though it wasn't an area that was an area that he had any previous exposure to.
Well, we got a few of those, just short comments here and there, and that's good. So hopefully the Real Space one will have a similar effect. That's a little more broadly covered than what Mr. McGovern was working on and building, but yeah, you never know. We'll see.
Yep, absolutely. We got a DM from Joseph Bridges, who sent in a wheel question, which I'll pass on to you. And he also DM'd a bunch of photos of his recent modeling work. And I encouraged him to post those in the dojo.
Sure.
And I want to tell everybody who's listening, we love seeing your work, but don't hide your light under a bushel by just DMing photos of it to Mike and I, because then only the two of us get to enjoy it. We would love it when you join the dojo, or if you're a new listener, or even if you've been listening a long time and haven't posted photos of 5 or 6 or 10 of the models that you've completed over the years. We'd love to have you do that, to post those in, because he posted he DM'd these to us, and I asked him to go ahead and do that. But there were several of them that I had questions about because one was a D7 in what I think are the early Lithuanian markings, which you don't see very often. I want to encourage everybody to share because we're a community here. And one of the big kicks I get is seeing everybody's work. So don't just DM them to us. Join the dojo and post them in the dojo. Finally, John Chung reached out to tell us two things. One, how much he enjoyed the Paul Budzig episode that we did a couple of episodes back. We've gotten a ton of feedback on that episode, all of it uniformly positive. And yes, we enjoyed that conversation as much as everybody out there enjoyed listening to it. And we're going to endeavor to have Paul on again sooner rather than later. We appreciate the feedback and you letting us know that you enjoyed that. In addition, John wanted to make sure you and I were going to be at Heritage Con. And I told him that it'd be darn tough to keep me away.
Well, then I told him we'd have him by the table and grab a segment there and then see about getting him back on, too, because we still owe him a better foot forward than what we gave him last time with the technical difficulty we had. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's all from the DM side.
Well, folks, we love this segment. We like the listener mail. We like the DMs. And the more the better, the more the merrier. If you'd like to email the show, please do so at plasticmodelmojo@gmail.com. Or if you want to DM through Facebook, you can do that too. We've had a few this time that didn't quite do it. But folks, give us a name. and a locale if you can, not your complete mailing address, obviously, but if you can just tell us a city and state or city and country where you're from, we appreciate it. And a name instead of a handle, that helps too. I suspect, Dave, some of these might be folks we know.
Oh, I suspect they are.
And they're coming. Some people have a Facebook group of their own and they're using their handle for that or whatever. It's okay. Nobody's mad. Let us know where you're from. We appreciate it.
We'd like all the listeners out there, if you haven't gone to whatever podcast app you're listening to us on, please go and rate us, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, whatever you use. Please rate us. We'd appreciate 5 stars. It helps us grow the podcast. If you're a listener and you know another modeler who isn't, please recommend us. Please show them. Maybe they're going to need a little help to figure out how to download and listen to a podcast. Please help them out. Having current listeners recommending us to their friends is the biggest single way we grow this podcast. And Mike and I really, really appreciate it.
In addition to that, please check out our fellow podcasts out there in the model sphere. You can do so by going to www.modelpodcast.com. That's Model Podcast plural. It's a consortium website set up with the help of Stuart Clark up in Canada, which we hope to see this weekend. You can go to that website and you'll find banner links to all the podcasts who are participating in a spirit of cross-promotion along with us. In addition to the podcast, there's a lot of blog and YouTube friends out there that we associate with. Chris Wallace, model airplane maker. He's got a YouTube channel and a great blog, and just had an appearance discussing one of his latest posts on fellow podcasters on the bench.
Yes.
Jim Bates, Scale Canadian TV. Check out his YouTube channel for his vlog there. Stephen Lee, Sprue Pie with Frets, a great long and short form blog. You're going to check that out and see what Steve's been up to. Jeff Groves, the Inch High Guy, all things 72nd scale. You can get on the Inch High Guy blog and see all kinds of batch builds. He just finished up his ME410s.
Yep.
That was an interesting batch build.
It is.
I think he just started another one, but we can all follow it there so we won't get lost.
Yep.
And finally, Panzermeister 36, our friend Evan McCallum, who we hope to see at Heritage Con as well. Great YouTube channel. All things weathering, and he's got some kit build reviews on there as well. So check out Panzermeister 36 on YouTube.
Looking forward to seeing both Evan and his lovely fiance. At this point, if you are not a member of IPMS USA, IPMS Canada, IPMS UK, the original IPMS, or any of the national IPMS organizations, please consider joining. These are groups of volunteers who give some of their time to run the national organizations and try and bring benefit to the modelers in their country. In addition, if you're not a member of AMPS, the Armor Modeling Preservation Society, and you're an armor builder, you have interest in armor and post-1900 figures, please consider joining AMPS. Good organization, full of good people.
Well, Dave, let's have a word from our sponsor.
Plastic Model Mojo is now brought to you by Model Paint Solutions, your source for Harder Steenbeck airbrushes, David Union power tools, and laboratory-grade mixing, measuring, and storage tools for use with all your model paints, be they acrylic, enamels, or lacquers. Check them out at www.modelpaintsolutions.com.
Well, Dave, we're at our special segment tonight, and we're going to be talking about real space.
Yep, we're going to be talking about real space with a very old friend of yours.
Yes, Mr. Mike Idakavage. Mike and I go back a long time, like darn near 40 years at this point. We were both founding members of the Southern Appalachian Scale Modelers back in the Tri-Cities area of Upper East Tennessee when Mike was employed in that geography. And everybody moved off eventually. The hobby shop closed. Mike took a job in a different city. I went off to college and we kind of lost touch. Then in Las Vegas in 2021, due to Mike's involvement with the IPMS as a volunteer at the Nats doing the registration all the time, we got to reconnect and we've kind of stayed in touch over the years since we've been doing the podcast. And you heard him not too long ago pitching his show there, AtlantaCon, with the Marietta chapter and the Atlanta chapters. And he's a real space modeler, and we decided to have him back for a full segment on the real space subject. So let's get into that. Well, Dave, we just talked to this gentleman a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
But, and now we've got him back to talk about the real space topic. Mike Idakavage, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're getting ready for HeritageCon, so we got something to look forward to.
The clock is ticking. The countdown is going on.
I cannot wait to get there.
Well, we're still looking over the hood for that show. Your show that we talked about in the Model Show Spotlight is in your rearview mirror. While we got you, since we pitched that show, won't you give us the net results of what happened down at AtlantaCon last week?
Yeah, I'll be glad to. It was kind of, in a nutshell, as they say, a very successful show for us. We probably broke several records for the AtlantaCon, and that's with the combined IPMS Marietta and IPMS Atlanta chapters getting together. Even just to add icing on the cake, we managed to thread the needle weather-wise. It rained like anything on Friday. Rain came back on Sunday, and Saturday was beautiful. So
that always helps.
The modeling gods were very respectful.
Oh, that's great.
But in regards to just to kind of like to throw out a little few numbers here, we had 128 entrants with models, people with modelers, enter models for a total of 559.
Oh, that's models. A good number.
Yes, it was. I think our last year was somewhere around 450 or so. So it was definitely a noticeable bump up. And we had 339 general admissions. So people who just really wanted to peruse the vendors and really enjoy looking at the models. So with those numbers, we were kept really busy just shifting the different categories around just to make room.
I would imagine that means it was very financially successful to you all.
We're still cranking through the numbers. We'll have that another week or so, but we don't have any sad faces on the in either chapters, anybody who was involved on the at the contest. Well, and we've also got some really good feedback. We've had several vendors contact us, one yesterday and a couple today, saying how can they reserve a space for next year. Worked out really well for the vendors. They were happy campers also.
That's good. So
did the vendors lighten your wallet?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And, one, I guess, a space model. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. But with John from UMM at our show with all his wonderful tools, and he has a few new ones that he's going to be trotting out at Madison. It was hard to keep that credit card in the wallet.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, that's from considering where he is. That's a pretty fair trip for him.
Oh, it is.
I'm a little bit surprised that he made that trek. He obviously had faith in your show.
Yeah, well, the last time he was here was in 2005 for the IPMS Nats that we had. In fact, that's where I first met him on that. He has a friend that's lives in south of Atlanta. So that's who he stayed with. So that helped. I was talking to him at the end, and he was really surprised. He mentioned that he was not expecting the size and the activity.
Well, good. I'm glad for you.
So he was very happily pleased.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah,
we're glad it was a success, and we're glad to have helped promote that a little bit.
Oh, and yeah, we really appreciate that. Thanks.
Well, Mike, we go way back, probably 40 years at this point, almost.
Yeah.
but you don't go way back with all our listeners. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got into real space and why that's kind of your thing?
Okay. Oh, I'd be glad to. Well, just as a just quick summary. Currently, I'm semi-retired, and for the past, 40 years or so, I've been essentially a research scientist in different technologies, with the brunt of it in the past 10, 15, 20 years in the technology used in 3D printing for the liquid resins.
Cool. But
let's go really far back now. How I started, I think I got, like a lot of people, my first models, probably I was six or seven, and it was a I can remember that one, the Revell, I guess it was a tugboat. It was a small boat that Revell had.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it's just and that's where I started. But I managed to time getting born and growing up at the early stage just as the space race was happening. So I was in early grade school when Alan Shepard had his flight. And of course, back then it was really big. So they would stop classes and they would bring in a really awful black and white TV. In other words,
on a cart.
Yes. What grade school were you at? I think we're probably at the same school.
Well, no, I think that happened at literally every school in America. But you were a few years ahead of me. Yeah, no, that I have that distinct memory of them rolling the little black and white TV in on a cart and everybody watching the launch.
Right. Yep. That's exactly what we did. And then that coincided in the modeling world for when Revell started putting out their the fantastic 1/110th scale Mercury Redstone.
Yep.
And then the Mercury Atlas with the really cool launch base.
Yep.
So I remember, in fact, they were the first space models, real space models that I built. Of course, they were about the only thing that was out there. You know, it's that was easily obtainable. I should put it that way. And that's how I got hooked. And I think being a scientist, what really intrigued me was a combination of exploration and technology. So that hooked me. And from there, that's really made my the basis for all my modeling. I mean, I branched out and I do a pretty wide variety now, but it's real space is sort of the core of my modeling interests.
That sounds great. My current career track, I've started accumulating a few real space subjects myself. I haven't built any yet, but hopefully we're not too far away from that.
Ah, good. Could you care to mention what they are?
Oh, I've got two of the Horizon models, Mercuries. I've got the old 66 Sea King from Dragon. I've got the little 72nd scale Mercury capsule from Dragon. And then I've got a crazy Convair. What would you call it?
It's a hypothetical.
Multi-stage space plane thing. That it's an old Revell kit as well, yeah. I believe.
But they were really designed at that time when those kits were coming out. Yeah, that's not fiction.
A concept model, I guess.
Better way of putting it.
Well, what are your favorite things within the real space genre? Ooh.
That's a really good question. But I think before we get into that, I got a question for both of you. How would you define real space? And I was thinking about that in the days leading up to our getting together tonight. There's several ways of doing that.
Yeah.
So before I kind of talk a little bit more along those lines, I thought I'd just I'd quiz the audience.
Well, I'll go first, Mike, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I go fairly broad here. Obviously, anything that was actually built and launched or done, obviously, is real space. Is an X-15 real space? Yes. And the NF-104, I think, qualifies as real space. In addition, anything that was a serious design, like one of my favorite. And I remember this growing up when it was a possibility. You remember the dinosaur?
Oh, very, very well. I have a short story. I have a little story to tell you afterwards about that, the dinosaur.
There is now a kit of that. And that was, you know, it was considered as the one of the possible follow-ons after Gemini as another branch out. Apollo went one way to get it to the moon. And then they were looking at the dinosaur for reusability.
Right.
And there's actually a kit of that now. And even though it was never built or anything like that, I would consider that real space as well.
Right. Yeah.
And not just manned vehicles. The Japanese, Hasegawa has done several Japanese satellite kits, which are just fantastic. And then you're starting to get, what's the name of that company out of Eastern Europe? Red
Star?
Red Star who's got the Sputnik.
Yes, yes.
And I think they've released something else, as a couple other things as well. So I'm pretty broad as far as that goes. Now, I would even go into future designs a little bit. Now, you know, when you get into Star Trek and Star Wars and science fiction stuff, to me, that's not real space. But designs that are on the boards now, but we don't know whether or not they're ever going to go anywhere, I think that's also real space. So I'm pretty broad about that, Mike.
I think I'm just like you. The broader, the better, I think, with this one. And yeah, all the X-planes, all the NASA high atmospheric research planes, all that kind of stuff. Probably even I would back up and start backing down the lineage of the ballistic missiles that actually led to the first manned rockets. All that lineage, even the concepts, like you just mentioned, the future stuff now was, you know, in the late 40s and 50s was when these concept models were being made.
Yeah,
those were the future in their eyes. So it's kind of the same thing there. So we're going to paint this pretty broad, Mike. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to fit in right along with both of you on this. I take a very, very wide view. And a lot of the space modelers that are my friends for over the years also kind of probably fall into this thing. It's not only what the both of you said. It's the obvious stuff: the Apollo, Mercury, Gemini, shuttle, now coming into the Dragon, and the equivalent Soviet and Russian liftoff. But it's much more than that. It's the space probes. It's the satellites. There have been some really nice kits of say the Cassini space probe and the Voyager, as Dave, as you were referring to, and quite a few others, Mariner, Pioneer, that are out there. But I take it a little bit even broader than that. And this is what really attracts me to modeling, I guess, real space, is that it really stretches your modeling skills in that there's a wide range of modeling categories you could fit real space into. You of course have the real space one, but let's go in aircraft, as Mike and Dave, you both said, whether it's the X-planes, X-15, the NF-104, you have those. The T-38 Talons that the astronauts use for training.
Yep.
To acclimated. There's some some really nice decals for those. Also, the Russians use the L-39 Albatross.
Right.
And there's some decals out for the cosmonaut training aircraft. So you can take it into armor now. So we got aircraft, armor. You have, in fact, what I'm just starting now is one of the NASA M113s.
Yeah.
Okay, to digress slightly, one of my favorite stories that I only read about this year is NASA using a Tamiya remote-controlled, it was a King Tiger chassis with a drill mounted to it to depressurize tires.
Oh, I've heard about that. Have you actually seen any photos of that?
Yeah, there are great photographs.
Cool.
Of it. And again, the moment you see it, you know what it is. It is the chassis and running gear of the large scale Tamiya Tiger tank, and it's got a drill mounted on the top of it, and that's obviously trying to depressurize tires like that. They're explosive, and there's a real danger to individuals.
Yeah.
So somebody at NASA came up with the idea, well, here, let's just get this RC tank, mount a drill on it, and we'll just drill into the tire to depressurize it.
Oh, I have to admit that now, that would make a great model.
There's an actual YouTube video out there called NASA's Tiger Tank. You'll have to search for it.
Yep.
It's great.
Oh, no, that does sound pretty good.
Your point is well taken. You go into armor. They got the M113s.
But you'd also – let's go out of the world, though. Let's go interplanetary with the the crawlers, the Russian lunar landers that they would then crawl around.
Right.
It's basically building armor. It just looks a little different.
Yeah.
On that. So you could start doing those. Continuing the spread across modeling, you have figures.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really fantastic looking real space connected figures. You have, of course, the Apollo astronauts, Gemini astronauts, but there's some great Russian figures, large scale. You could have busts. Some of the ones that I have in my stash to be done are a really great, and this came out about a year or so ago, a Russian cosmonaut in the Orlan suit, which is their one that you would see them in the doing spacewalks. And he's holding on to the side of probably the Salyut. You know, he's mm-hmm. just floating, but it's a 1/24th figure. So you get a lot of details in there.
You know, I hadn't even considered figures, but you're right. There's a ton of real space figures, busts, and
oh, there sure are the
all the different space suits, including a lot of the concept suits.
Yes, there are. In fact, it's surprising once you start searching and looking for them how many there are. So you get your practice your figure painting skills. I've seen at least one buildup. You get for ships. Let's kind of move to ships. A little bit different there, and you have the Hornet, the carrier. Revell had a kit, Hornet right. Plus 3. They yep. had a little Apollo capsule. They also released the same a carrier kit picking up a Gemini.
Yep.
I've seen at least one ship, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the radar tracking ships used mm-hmm. In the space program.
I think there is actually a kit of the Soviet the Yuri Gagarin.
Maybe that's Soviet, what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
The Soviet one with the four big dish antennas on the top of it.
Oh, right. And going one more general modeling category to kind of round this out, automobiles, cars. I know several really good modelers who ended up doing the Corvettes that the Apollo astronauts drove.
Yeah.
Right down to the paint, to the the same, yep. And really good. Alan Bean, Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, they're all given really nice looking Corvettes.
And then again, let's not forget the Lunar Rover.
Yes.
You know, that's technically a car.
Oh, it is. No, you're right. You're right. And I think it was the last one that has the bumper sticker from the car dealer in Cape Canaveral that gave them the Corvettes earlier on. They
put really?
The bumper sticker. Yep. It has a bumper sticker from the car dealer.
Well, and then, of course, you've got there's the first Tesla that is out in space right now with a mannequin sitting behind the wheel.
Yes.
No, and man, can you wait when the aliens encounter that? What are they going to be thinking?
See, that would make a great diorama, though. You have that with a, you know, you pick your own alien,
yeah.
kind of scratching its heads, wondering, what is this?
Yeah.
So, but you could see doing real space modeling, you could really, it's easy not to get bored because you could always be doing something related, but challenging your modeling skills. It's not cranking out the same launch vehicle time after time.
Now, one thing that I don't want to say it bothers me because it really doesn't, but as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, I am a scale absolutist or a scale, a 72nd scale is God's one true scale. And now there's a lot of real space that is 72nd scales, particularly the launch vehicles and the capsules and stuff. But the one thing, if you're going to truly do a lot of real space, you're going to have to be willing to model everything from, I think that Sputnik kit is 1/6 or 1/10 or, you know, a really large scale. All the way down to, you know, if you want to do some of the largest launch vehicles, you can do them in 72nd scale because some of them are available. But, you know, a Saturn V in 72nd scale is a monster.
Whereas, it sure is.
Whereas, you know, it's available in 96 scale or 144 scale, which is, let's face it, a little more reasonable. But you at least are going to have to be willing to go across scales to build the whole breadth of real space.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And if you look through my stash, you would see, I tend to be a 1/72 purist. I prefer that as the scale, but I have everything from 1/200th or 1/144th on up to 1/35th and 1/24th. A lot of the big space probes or satellites are in 1/24th. So you can get the detail on that. And figures are anywhere from 1/9th, 1/10th on down to 1/72. But you're right, it's a real mix.
One thing that I've noticed is, of course, now this is changing because we're getting a lot of mainstream manufacturers who are now cranking out real space on the regular. I mean, Horizon has dedicated themselves to it, but even other manufacturers are releasing real space kits regularly. But it wasn't always that way. And so real space had developed around it a really robust cottage industry. Do you have you purchased a lot of the, you know, resin and aftermarket things done by secondary manufacturers, as we'd say?
Oh, yeah. Dave, you are spot on that. In fact, most of the mainstream manufacturers, the Revels, Tamiya, Hasegawa, for the most part, really have they're really great stuff, but they tend to be limited, and Revell tends to have been a little bit older. So the majority of the kits in my real space stash are from the small cottage type. You have real space models is iconic, located down in Florida, with a really great range of the space probes, the Pioneer, the Magellan, and of course a lot of the launch vehicles. In fact, I picked up what was my probably the most wanted kit I have ever had. Just recently, they released the Surveyor, Lunar Surveyor.
Oh wow!
Lander. Oh, I think in fall, like November, December, mm-hmm. So relatively recently, brand new release. And that's been my most wanted kit for years.
Huh. Why do you have a particular attachment to that one?
it kind of goes back, if I could divulge and tell a little story that
sure
also kind of reflects why I've been so interested in real space. But it involves the Surveyor and Apollo 12. Back when, in fact, I first met Mike when we were in Kingsport, Tennessee, I was doing a lot of the space. But at that point, Revell was pretty much the only game in town for space kits, and they were in a big drought. They really hadn't released their kits like their Apollo Astronaut for years, since the early 70s.
Yeah, and they weren't that good to begin with.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But when if that's all you got, that's what you kind of work with.
Yeah. Beggars can't be choosers.
Yep. Oh, you're right. And I had picked up several of the Apollo, the Revell. This is the large scale kit, the one, was it 1/12th, I think? If I remember, Astronaut on the Moon. And I just had them in my stash from the 70s. So here it is, mid early 1980s. And a good friend of mine, who's a modeler, professional modeler, was living in North Carolina. He was contacted by Alan Chaikin, the guy who wrote Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And First Men on the Moon, you know, mm-hmm. the books that they're based on. Well, Alan contacted the guy's named Gino Dykstra, and said, I have a Apollo astronaut who really wants this kit.
This is the Gino Dykstra, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Gino.
People know that name, particularly in the movie and science fiction community.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely in the science fiction. You're right. And Gino was living in Asheville, North Carolina, when we were in Tennessee, and he and I became pretty good friends. Well, he did not have the kit, but he goes, I know somebody who does have this kit. And so he contacted me, and he got Alan Chaikin in touch with me. And I was told, well, it's Alan Bean. And he really wants, he's an artist. He's a fantastic artist. In fact,
when
he was
really
living, you know, unbelievable artist. Huh. His paintings would go for a couple hundred thousand a wow. piece it, for the low cost ones. I have quite a few of his signed prints, but do a little search for Alan Beam's paintings and you'll be really impressed. But anyway, he wants a model. And I said, wow, for Apollo 12 astronaut, he can have one of mine.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. No, for just to say, just the, you know, the bragging rights, I gave something
to Alan Beam, right?
Yeah. It's like,
can I take it to him?
Yeah. 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 So I figured, okay, just send me his address. You know, well, send me your address and I'll ship it to you. But if you mind, you know, don't mind, I like to have a little note to Alan, you know, just being like a fanboy type of thing. You know,
sure.
Like, you know, cool. And I was, you know, my pleasure. And Jay goes, no, I'll tell you what, I'll give you Alan Bean's home address. Just mail it to him directly. And I went, oh, that's cool. I mailed it. And at the same time, I was working at Eastman Kodak, Tennessee Eastman. Mike, you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
Little company in town. And I had told a few people that I actually mailed a model to an astronaut. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, sure, sure. And so mailed off and then forgot all about it. About 3, 4, 5 weeks later, I get a call on Friday night. My wife and I are watching some kind of HBO movie or something. I go answer the phone, pick it up, and he goes, is Mike Idikavich there? And I go, yeah. And he goes, hi, this is Alan Bean. And I went, no, you're not. I just figured it was the guys I was working with played a
joke. Sure.
And he goes, no, really, it is. No, you're not. But as he's talking, as my wife says, my jaw starts dropping and dropping and dropping. And he wanted to call and thank me for sending that. And the reason he wanted the model kit was that being a painter, and it was kind of interesting. He said, he was so full of, when he walked on the moon, so much is happening. You're going like second by second schedule and everything. He said, it's easy to forget how things looked. Where were the shadows? How, you know, especially after you're, you know, 10 years later. So sure. He said he wanted to set that up on a studio and, use that as a model for his paintings. So he actually sent, and he said, and I just sent you a package. And when Alan was on the moon, some of the real great photos of the surveyor on the moon is with him standing next to it. Mm-hmm. That was his mission, the surveyor. So that's why I got, you know, I always wanted to do a thing of Alan being on the moon. He gave me a piece of it was the exterior of a spacesuit with a patch, and he had his crew sign it for me.
Oh, that's amazing.
And you have to remember, growing up, these guys were the coolest of the cool.
Oh, they were, yeah.
In the late 60s and early 70s, I mean, every boy, myself included, aspired to be an astronaut because there was nothing cooler. That had to be an otherworldly experience for you.
And what was amazing is that about 5, 7, 8 years later, he was giving a talk in Huntsville, and I went there. And as going through the line, he remembered once I introduced myself, he remembered me, and he started talking about the model and everything. So he had an amazing memory for that.
Well, there you go, Dave.
There you go.
There's the story, and that's a darn good one.
That's right. When you're at the cocktail party and everybody's dragging out the famous guy I've met story, that's a pretty good one to have in your back pocket.
Oh yeah, I'm glad I logged that one in.
Now where were we?
Yeah, sorry about that. I got us off track. But
no.
And I especially thought Mike, you would like it because it happened all the time when I had first met you there.
That's right.
When you were asking me what my favorite real space topics are, and so I'll kind of bring it there. In that, while I like just about the whole wide range, in fact, I like the variety the best. So I kind of go from a launch vehicle to a space probe to a figure. And again, I'm starting to work on the M113. I've really taken a shine and attracted to both the space probes and the landers that landed on the moon and Titan and some of those. Mm-hmm. Because you could weather the bejesus out of them. It's really incredible science, you know, to do that, to get those space probes out there. Like the Voyager is still, you know, beeping away.
Yep.
All these years. So that's probably where I kind of would gravitate to, but I, I'm agnostic when it comes to the topic. I like it all.
Well, I think the one thing I remember that was real space when we were both in Tennessee was I think it was a NASA T6. Did you build one of those?
I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I did a lot of, aircraft.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. In fact, that is like somewhat related. It's NASA, though not, it's sort of just slightly with real space, is the NASA aircraft that they've flown over the years. It's hundreds and hundreds of different ones. You want to do a Phantom. NASA flew a Phantom. They flew, obviously, a lot of F-15s, props, the P-51s.
The SR-71.
Ones, yeah. The
WB-57. F-106B. I mean, you could build just NASA aircraft all day long.
Right.
It is a huge, huge collection.
Well, what's the crazy one that was a modified Canberra?
That's the WB-57.
Yeah, WB-51, yeah.
Which they're still using to this day. NASA keeps it alive and kicking because I don't know if you saw the story. Apparently, the... what is the air base that's across from Norfolk? It's one where the F-22s are.
Yeah, I know what you mean, not Tyndall.
No, it's not, yeah, Tyndall. That's in Florida.
Yeah, it's in Florida.
In any event, the one across from Norfolk.
Right, right. I know which one you mean.
Starting in last November, December, they had a bunch of incursions into the airspace from either drones or UAVs or RPV, they're not sure what it was. And so the Air Force was investigating these things, and they actually called in the WB-57 from NASA because it has mounted in its nose some very, very powerful long-range cameras.
And
they had it orbiting over the airbase. You can see it on you know, in one of those air tracking apps like Flight Radar or one of those others, and they had the WB-57 orbiting over the airbase for hours at a time, trying to figure out what these UAVs were. And if you go to the war zone, there's Tyler Rogway has recently done a story on it.
Wow. No, I hadn't heard of that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they still keep that W-57 alive because of that. It's still very, very useful.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual physical aspects of real space modeling. To kind of frame it, you know, I've started picking up some of these kits, and one thing I noticed that might intimidate some people, it may even intimidate me a little bit, is that seem to be faced with a lot of white and a lot of black.
White, black, and bare metal.
I would add bare metal to that.
Yeah.
Three favorite things to paint.
You're right about that. I don't know. I've of them, really, to me, bare metal is the more challenging.
Yeah.
The one. Once you do a few of the white, I've been for a long time a real happy user of ye olde testers white enamel.
Mm-hmm.
On that used to be in Model Master, but now it's the same stuff in the little dinky bottles that are twice the cost of Model Master bottles, I guess. You know, that one, but it's great because you give it a couple days to dry, and it polishes up real smooth. Decals on, you don't have to gloss coat it. So white isn't bad. I also do a lot of airliners, so you get used to white, and white.
Yeah.
And then for a change, you do a white. You know, when you really want to mix things up on that.
And you want to mix things up, you go off-white.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Could be wild, crazy. But when it comes to bare metal, because there's usually no way around that. My go-to for quite a few years now has been Alclad. I seem to have the minimum amount of trouble with that. You know, it dries really well, and it looks great. I don't know if either of you remember, I had an Atlas in last year's Nats in San Marcos. It was in the hypothetical, and it was like a steel type shiny metal. That's all Alclad. You know, it gives you a really good metal look.
Yeah.
Though I'm starting to, and I haven't done this on a real space model yet because I've just really picked these up, but I've been trying out MRP paints. They're metals.
Yeah.
And they actually give a really, really nice look. That's almost like spraying a standard enamel. Mm-hmm. It's an acrylic lacquer, but it goes on, dries real quickly. The only thing I haven't quite yet achieved is that really deep steel metal look.
Yeah.
But other than that, it covers the aluminums and, you know, off shade aluminum, things like that. It looks really good and just easy to use.
What are some other gotchas out there that folks getting into real space might want to be aware of?
Probably what I would think is, how do you hold a dang thing when you're, you know, and get it painted? You know, it doesn't have, most of them don't have landing gear, you know, depending on what you're doing. But, you know, space probes or launch vehicles. Take the Gemini. So, say, okay, we don't have a good 70-second kit yet. Hopefully Horizon will fill that niche, but just a new 1/144th. How do you mount these? Because a lot of them don't come with stands, especially the garage type kits. And what I've found the best thing to do is I will do the classic insert somewhere on the model an aluminum tube, mm-hmm. Usually at a discrete spot and how I want it considered for the launch vehicles, right where the engines are. Majority of time you could kind of do it center, but like the Gemini, you may have to go off center a little bit. So I'll epoxy an aluminum tube there and then get a brass tube, which just fits the inside diameter of the aluminum tube. And that's the stand. So I could slide the rocket on and off while transporting it. And once it sits down there and you size it correctly, so you don't have a lot of the brass showing. Or you could paint the brass black, I guess, also. It's really an effective way to hold it. And then I'll use that all through the build while I'm painting it. Like it's a Gemini on a stick, like a popsicle on a stick type of thing. And you could do it with so many things.
Well, we had a club member who used to do a lot of in-flight jets, large-scale jets, 30-second scale.
Playing on a pole.
Playing on a pole, and he would do the same thing. He would bond a tube inside, put it like a massive wad of epoxy putty in there, something to really keep it stable, and then sand it flush on the outside. It may be coming out at an angle, you know?
Right. So
he would trim it flush with the fuselage and blend it out, and you couldn't even see it. And then the next size acrylic rod or brass rod or something would slip right in there. It's the exact same thing you're doing.
Yep.
It's a handy handle.
Yep, you're right. And when you take a look at it and you realize there's not many other places where you can handle it. And another tip that I picked up, in fact, I was back from, I think, possibly Gino at Dykstra back when we were in Tennessee, and I've been using it ever since on a lot of things, is that when you look at not so many launch vehicles, but the Apollo spacecraft, the back of the Gemini, most satellites, and Mike, you probably know this, because you live and breathe these 7 days a week at where you work, is the Kapton foils.
Yeah.
You know, how do you get that shiny look? And some of the kits, I think Dragon Apollo has it actually molded in like a crinkle, and you have to paint them gold. But I've never found a way to make that look real as the different versions of Kapton. So what I'll do is I bought a pack of gold, different color gold candy wrappers. And you get these candy companies, you know, for hobbyists, people make candy at home. And, okay. And they'll, you know, you get a pack of papers, which are good for 4 lifetimes, for very cheap. And I found I just cut them out and use some version of a white glue, maybe Gator glue. To get them on, and that looks very effective.
And where do you get that from? Just like from Amazon or somewhere like that?
Yeah, get Amazon. I guess Glenn Johnson from Real Space had mentioned in an email to an email group we have for Real Space Modelers. He had a name of a confectionery company, so you could probably do a search. But I think Amazon has. I bought mine years ago, and I put just a small dent into it. Like it was $500 for $8. Sheets on that. You could almost wallpaper a room, making it look like a lunar module, I guess.
There you go.
on that. But it's really effective looking. And I've seen people take real space blankets, you know, the kind you get at camping stores, and okay. cut those up to get that effective translucent orange. You know, it's in different shades. You get different colors. There's some are reddish right. yeah, shades. Some are
something, it's like something metallic under the because the raw Kapton is kind of an amber color.
Yeah,
well, right. The stuff
it depends
we use
on what's underneath it gives right. it the shade. But it's really easy to do, and you just add that, and it makes your model pop because it gives a different texture to it.
Mike, I assume that you are excited to no end that Horizon has announced an Atlas Agena.
Oh, you're seeing me right now smile from ear to ear as you're saying that.
You and me both, because this is, okay, keep in mind, I was born in 61, so I'm a few years behind you. But the Atlas Agena program is the first one I really have a real good memory of.
Oh, that's cool.
From at the time. I mean, right. you know, space docking. The first time they ever did space docking. I was so pleased to see. I'm like you. I was grinning from ear to ear when they announced that.
And if I take a wild guess, Dave, was that the model that when we started the our chat, you said you just got?
No, as a matter of fact, it isn't. I went wide on the one I just got in the mail today. I was totally unaware of this, and you may be unaware of it as well. Company out of China called Bronco.
Okay, yeah,
You know, because you built that Dongfang.
That's right.
Brought it to the same contest I brought mine. Thank you very much.
And set it up right next to yours.
Next to yours, yes. Thank you.
Think of it as, Dave, it was a tribute to your bottling.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It didn't sting or anything. In any event, that company used to do armor. And then they seem to have gotten out of armor or morphed into another brand name, Gecko. But Bronco is still in business. They did that Dongfang, or SS-2, if you want to build it as the Soviet version. Well, I was unaware until like 3 weeks ago. They do one of the first Chinese launch vehicles, what are called the Long March.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they do in 72nd scale a Long March 1D.
Wow.
Which was one of the developments of, you know, they all start out from ballistic missiles. It was their development of a satellite launch vehicle from their ballistic missile. I just got it today. It's very few parts, as you can imagine, but it's awfully cool looking. And to have a Chinese launch vehicle in your collection, I mean, if you've got a real space collection and you've got a French Ariane and you've got all the U.S. launch vehicles and you've even got SS-6 or whatever they use.
The Soviets took the
SS-6 and made it their launch vehicle. I forget what they call it. And you've got all those. But to have a Chinese launch vehicle as well, that's just way cool.
Oh, that would be. That is great.
And very inexpensive.
And a launch tower or anything with it?
No, just the launch vehicle itself.
It's the low part count that makes Dave attracted to real space.
Low part count that makes David happy. Although it should make David happy, because as David has realized, now that I've gotten older, I enjoy building more than I do painting and decaling. So low parts count should not make me happy now. But let's face it, a lot of these real space launch vehicles can be low count. But
you're right.
I will admit, I am waiting for a Falcon 9 in 72nd scale injection molded.
Yeah, you can get it in resin.
I know.
Now, in fact, there's a new company that I ran into in the Chattanooga show in January called Shadow 3D out of Florida. Have you seen these guys?
No, I have not. I've heard of them, though.
I got a Falcon 9 Block 5.
Okay.
From them in 1/144th, but I think they had the 72nd.
Well, if they're 3D printing, of course, they can.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's very good quality. Meaning that's what I do now, 3D printing.
Right.
I'm critical. It's really good. He only sells through Facebook, I think, at this point.
Well, guys, we've talked about some of what's available out there now. We've talked about a little bit on some of the finishing challenges and build challenges, kind of at a high level. Mike, what's not out there? What does the real space community need as far as kit availability? What would you like to see, either injection molded plastic or really any format, just to get one?
Well, for the most part, it's almost a cliche, but just about everything that's been that you could possibly want is out there in some form, or was out available 10, 15 years ago in resin or 3D printed. But probably what I would think, what I would place as the number one must have for a lot of real space modelers is a good injection molded, the Falcon and Dragon.
And then a decent scale to just Dragon capsule.
Correct. Yeah. A good scale where you see get detail. I think that would probably be the number one item on most modeler, real space modelers list. I would then go, because, you know, as we talked earlier about broadening things, you go into figures, because while a lot of the common Apollo and some of the cosmonaut suits, but maybe some of the Gemini suits, that's one thing in good detail. Mm-hmm. Not the crude ones that were in the Revell Gemini kit.
Right.
But something it's very authentic, because they had a variety of different looking suits, both the not only the spacewalk, but the ones that they wore in the spacecraft, the one with the soft helmets you saw. So yeah. I would like personally to see a good range of different astronaut uniform, suits.
Well, I'll tell you one I would like to see.
What's that?
Trumpeter did, the Chinese did a space station that was a very small test station that they did. They sent some astronauts up to it.
It was a Tycho.
Right. And then they let it burn up. But they've launched a new space station that they are now assembling in space. I think they may have two modules up right now. And they're planning their own ISS all on their own.
Ah, okay.
A Trumpeter in 72nd scale did the first one. I would love to see Trumpeter take on the second one. Although, as this thing grows, I think 72nd scale might be a little too big a scale for it. But that's one I think that we really could use.
That would be good.
That's happening, and almost nobody's paying attention to it.
No, you're right. That's a good, very, very good point. I'm sure they would probably eventually put some version out, probably in a very small scale or smaller scale, like 1/144th,
right,
for the home crowd.
Right. And once it's available in China, eBay is your friend.
Right. Yeah. And then you have the Artemis on our side.
Oh, yes.
Just starting to find that's going out.
Assuming we're actually going to get to see it go. Come on, guys.
I hope so.
It will do it.
Yeah.
So it's just my kind of answer your question. There's just so much out there once you start looking. There's really not a lot that are must haves. A lot of individual missions, for especially for different space probes, could be made. But there's not a lot of just unique subjects. So the good news is that if you want to build something, it's a chance you can find it out there and build it.
That's interesting, because on our last episode, 111, we were talking with a guest who's into like the movie monsters and
right,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we were kind of surprised by the amount of aftermarket that's kind of out there in cottage industry that surrounds that kind of genre. And we see it at Wonderfest up here, some of it, but it was just to have him reiterate it and really spell it out for us was really impressive. So yeah, I can see the same thing existing for real space, probably even to a higher degree even.
Yeah. And I think you're right about that. It is, there's a lot of stuff that may not be in the current Tamiya or Hasegawa or Revell catalog, but if you start looking, there's a lot of it's really good. Some requires modeling skills, of course, but a lot of it is really decent out there.
Speaking of modeling skills, Mike, that's another area that's really real space has a real area for the true modeler, the Mike style modeler who loves doing a lot of scratch building. There's almost an endless number of satellite that, you know, different solar probes or Mercury probes or, you know, Earth studying satellites. There's tons of information available about them. Plenty of photographs, plenty of drawings and plans. And if you're into scratch building, a lot of times the basic shapes are boxes and rectangles and stuff like that.
Right.
That you can build out of sheet plastic and then using plans and photos go to town and you can have your one and only of any particular satellite you care to scratch build.
Oh, you're right. Dave, I'm actually glad you really brought that up because I have a little bit of trivia for you guys regarding real space, and it involves, touches upon what you just said, Dave, because I was thinking about this last weekend as I was looking forward to our call, our chat, and I wanted to get some numbers for you. In the past roughly 20 years, at least three of the best of show at the IPMS Nats have been scratch-built real space models.
Yep.
And probably more, a single category, single numerical category, probably has more best of show winners than any other modeling genre.
You know, I'd love to go back and do that calculation from the beginning to see what categories have had best of show how many times. That would be an interesting, but you're right. As of late, you are seeing real space coming on very, very strong. And I'd argue at least part of that has to do with the fact that we're seeing a thanks to Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Northrop Grumman and Boeing and all these guys coming on with a whole new generation of technology. And it kind of has that feel that we experienced when we were growing up, and this was all cutting edge, brand new, and cool.
Right.
And so I think that's why you're seeing the big growth in real space over the last number of years.
Yep. No, I definitely agree with you on that. It's there's so much you could do, and it's out there. One of the challenges is just getting references. You know.
Yeah.
There's not many detail and scale. Lunar Rover, you know, book. Yeah. I'm still waiting for that one to come out, I guess. Yeah. But you do enough searching around. There's this outstanding videos, some great YouTubes. Mike McCaskey, who you had as a guest, I think was it about a year ago, year and a half ago, maybe?
Almost two, yeah.
Yeah, he has a whole series of YouTube in-progress builds of various space subjects like the Buran, an ISS astronaut and a Gemini military design that was planned, you know, step by step that you could pick up, people could pick up hints on there. So there's a lot out there, but you just got to search for it a little bit more than usual.
Well, that's a good segue there. As we get toward the end here, I wanted to talk about, you mentioned the reference and, you know, we had Mike on quite a while back, but I just know through interacting with you and then having him as a guest. And there's another gentleman that you guys are kind of the three amigos of real space. You got Mike Idakavich, Mike McCaskey, and Robert Shorey.
Rob Shorey. Yep. Rob Shorey.
So what's the real space community like? You guys seem to be pretty tight. And what's that been like as a community?
It's probably a good community as you can get because everybody's very helpful. And it's quite large. It's international. We got some amazing modelers, real space modelers in the UK and Europe join in on this group. We have a news group for real space modelers. There's also some pages on Facebook, but it's a real helpful group. A lot of people sharing hints. A lot of the garage companies or the smaller companies, I guess most of them aren't in garages anymore, participate. And you know, give kind of heads up on what's going on. But it's actually a really, really tight group. We usually have a big meeting at the IPMS Nats. We get together. In fact, the Real Space Seminar tends to be one of the regularly, you know, highly attended one, 70 mm-hmm. people maybe attending it. I've seen it where it was standing room only in that one.
Yes.
So I think it's one of those groups where everybody always wants to help everybody else. It's a real positive scene.
Well, that's cool. It's probably born out of the need for the information exchange.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great point. And I bet, yeah, I think you're right, especially early on. And then it has started growing. It just kept that culture.
Well, that's cool. One last thing. What are you working on at the moment, real space related?
Okay, the real space related is just I've got two. So the M113 is really capturing my attention now on that for using the decals from last year's Nats.
Yeah, I was about to ask. That's that last year's decal sheet, and you got a tough color to match there too.
Not if you do the white one, and that's the one I want to do.
Smart move.
Yeah, only because they were my reference photos that were used for that decal.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
So I go, I want to do the one I took pictures of, or I actually had someone take pictures for me of that he had access.
Remember, when you finish that model and enter it at Madison, it qualifies for a special award for the use of decals from a previous IPMS decal sheet.
Right.
Don't forget to check that box.
I probably won't have it at Madison, but Virginia Beach.
Oh, you know, come on. You
I'll
get
look
it
forward
done.
To Virginia Beach. Because I'm also literally gator wrestling a Saturn V in a launch base for it.
Oh, my. Which kit? What scale?
144th. It's going to be the Airfix kit I'm using. But I'm using what's called NewAir. There's a fantastic company, small company out of, I think, Czechoslovakia called NewAir.
NewAir.
Yep. Yeah. And it's resin stuff. And they have a wide assortment of just really – different real space related kits. And one of them is a Saturn V base, a Saturn 1B base. So it's a launch pad, but it's not the full gantry. It's just enough to give it a base. And
gotcha.
I'm currently struggling with that now. Let's say the resin weighs more than I do. And it's going to take time.
So when are we going to see the Surveyor? Is that up at the top of the list?
That's going to be right after the M113.
Okay.
Because I want to finish salivating over it for a while, but I'm going to do a diorama with Alan Bean there on it.
That ought to be awesome.
Well, Mike, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been beyond enjoyable because it was when we started this podcast, I was able to reconnect with you after many, many years of of no contact and wondering whatever happened to all those guys in the club. And once we got the podcast going and started attending Nats again, we ran into you in Las Vegas, and it's just been a real pleasure. So thanks for coming on and talking about your favorite subject with us. And we're glad to add it to our catalog of topics covered.
Great. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity. This has been a real fun session, and I'm kind of surprised. I was worried going, now, what are we going to talk about for an hour?
Oh, please.
And you had to shut us off going, yep. So, well, once we got going, it was good. And I never even told why I was in the very beginning when Dave mentioned the dinosaur program, why that one also I had a small connection I have. It's why I owe my professional career to the dinosaur program.
Really?
Well, you got to tell this.
It's a short one, by the way, not anything like Alan Bean. And it's less exciting. But when I was in high school, my cousin was an engineer, electric engineer, and he was working on the dinosaur program, you know, as they were building the prototype. And he would tell me about it. And the university that I went to, which is Drexel University in Philadelphia, I said, I want to do that. That's what I'm going to go. So I went to Drexel. And then I found chemistry and science. And, you know, it didn't go until I didn't want to be an engineer. I liked the science part of it. But that started me out on the career that turned out to be quite successful for me over the years.
Well, looking at the fact that Mike's an engineer, you clearly made the right decision.
I don't know, Dave. I'm sure he knows how to drive the train well.
I have to tease.
Yeah, I did have a relative ask my mom what railroad I was going to be working for when she told him I was going to be an engineer. Oh, yeah.
Well, Mike, we're looking forward to seeing you at Madison.
Yep, I'll see you at registration, by the way.
I figured that, and well, I hope you're going to come by the dojo at some point. and share an adult beverage and
yes.
spend a little time talking, because as this past hour and a bit has shown, we could talk about this stuff all day long.
We sure can. I really appreciate you guys giving a shout out to Real Space Modeling. It tends to get overlooked frequently in a lot of yep. modeling forums, and there's a lot happening there. So, my hat's off to you, both of you, for doing this.
Well, do me a favor, post pictures of your current projects in the dojo.
Okay, will do. Will do.
All right.
All right, Mike. Well, we'll let you go and we'll catch up in Madison.
Sounds great. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about Real Space again.
Yes, I think it's a hot topic, especially with there's a bunch of new kits coming out. And given the stuff that SpaceX is doing and some of these other real space companies, I think 2024 is going to be an amazing year in space, and therefore something that a lot of real space modelers are going to get really enthused about.
Well, Dave, it's the Benchtop Halftime Report, and the Benchtop Halftime Report is brought to us by Squadron. Head on over to squadron.com for the latest kits and accessories, all at a great price and with great service. And if you're on the go, Dave, you can also check out their new mobile apps for both Apple and Android devices.
Oh, neat.
That's kind of cool. So you don't want to check that out.
That is cool.
So check out Brandon and Company over at Squadron, adding to your stash since 1968. Dave, what is on your bench?
Well, my bench is focused on HeritageCon. The LCM-3 is, as we speak, about an hour's worth of modeling away from being done. It will be at HeritageCon, I promised. In addition, the Musaru from last year that I finished after the photographs were due, but before the contest, and then had it injured during transport, is going to, if I'm lucky, be reassembled and will also be entered at HeritageCon. Additionally, the SS2 that I built from Bronco I'm taking. So I may have three entries at HeritageCon, and I don't think I've had three entries in a model contest in quite a long time. So I'm looking forward to it, but I've had to try and put blinders on, just focusing on the LCM just to get it done, and it's close, and I'll be happy when it gets finished.
What specifically on the LCM have you been working on?
Well, the big thing is using the Silhouette, my Cameo, Silhouette Cameo 4, I have cut my first set of masks ever. In fact, this past weekend, I did not get much modeling done other than spending time fiddling with the Cameo. There's a huge learning curve to it. It's not particularly necessarily hard, but it's not something, I mean, you can watch videos all day and they really do help. And I've found some out there that have been really, really helpful. But just like any other aspect of modeling, particularly like airbrushing, you can watch videos of how to do it all day long, but until you get into the trenches and start doing it, do you really start to learn? And so I've used the Cameo cutter. I've got the masks down. After we record this tonight, I am going to paint those stencils. And we'll see how it goes. I'm super excited to do this. I'm super excited to finish the LCM, which is actually for the September's group build in Madison. So I'll actually have my Madison group build entry done 4 months early, which has to be some sort of record for me.
Probably true.
Probably true. But if I can get that and get that Arma P-51 glued back together, I'll be on a roll and I'll be pretty darn happy. What's your benchtop looking like?
it's kind of cooled a little bit. I was on a tear there after I got the Moosaroo Cup entry finished.
Yep.
Had a little bit of life going on, kind of diluting the mojo a little bit.
Yep.
One of the biggest things I've done since the last segment was I decided I couldn't live with the E16 spinner, the kit spinner from the Fujimi kit. The hub and the spinner were two parts, but instead of the blades being molded to the hub and then the spinner cap fitting over that with the scallops on it to clear the blades.
Right.
The prop blades just stub right into the spinner and it looks terrible. And I'd mulled over whether I was going to try to scribe a line there, or even once I had the spinner completely painted, make a little mask out of something and come back in and put a little black area at the root of all the blades and maybe fake it that way.
Right.
But I came up with an idea to fix it, and I think it worked out well. What I did was I took the spinner out of the second kit I have, and I cut the blades off of it, and then I used the scars of where the blades were to start some holes, and then I hollowed out those scallops that would normally be in it, you know, to fit over the blade roots.
Right.
And then formed a buck up out of it, and I vacuformed a new spinner cap out of like 10,000 styrene.
And you posted pictures in the dojo.
Oh, yeah.
You got a really good pull on that. How many attempts did that was the one thing when I vacuform, and I haven't done it in a number of years, but when I vacuform stuff, it would take me 6 or 7 pulls to get one that's acceptable.
The first one was pretty good and probably usable, but I went ahead and made a second one because there was a little defect on it that I wasn't sure was on my master or not. So really just twice, but I'm using a better piece of equipment than I think you were using.
Yes. I've got the old Manny Mattel. You've got the nice actual vacuform machine.
That's right. So just one or two tries. It's a real simple part. I didn't anticipate any problems with it. So it worked out well.
Well, although being a conical shape like that, you know, the one thing that you're fighting is getting a wrinkle in the plastic, a vertical wrinkle in the plastic as you pull down over it. And you didn't seem to have any problem with that.
No, I think with the round shape, that's not much of a risk. That happens a lot more where you've got a square corners and things like that. So
yeah,
it came out pretty good. So I trimmed it off and sanded it to the final finish, and it just slips right over top of the other kit spinner with the blade still on it. It's still not perfect, but unless you went back in and just completely fabricated a new propeller, it's going to give enough of a look that I think it's going to be convincing in the scale anyway. Well, the other thing I was working on was the KV85 base. And last time we had the Benchtop Halftime Report, I think I'd just finished painting the ties and the rails to the finish.
Yeah.
So I had sifted some creek gravel from the local stream down here and was thinking about using it. Got it on there, you know, put some dry down in place on these ties and just didn't like the look of it. It was too brown. All the stones were round, so it looked like river rock, which is rarely, if ever, used for ballast.
Right.
Again, the color wasn't doing it for me. So I ordered some real crushed rock ballast from a company called Arizona Rock and Mineral, which is a fairly well-known company in the model railroad sphere. You know, it's inexpensive because it's just real crushed rock. You can get it in size for various model railroad scales. This was O scale, which is about 48 scale in the railroad scale, but it seemed about right for what I wanted to use it for. Still, the color just wasn't doing it, man. Once I washed all the dust off the crushed rock and got it down to its natural colors again, it's got like a trace of like red jasper in it that just doesn't look right. And there's too much of it in there to actually hide. I can't pick it out. There's too much of it. So I've got to soften those colors. So folks may have seen it on the dojo. I set up a test where I took a small sample of all this rinsed and dried ballast and glued it up with VMS sand and ballast freeze. Let that set up completely. And then I went back with about every kind of wash I have on hand.
Yes, you did. I think there were seven or eight in total.
I'm using a couple of acrylic washes and some of the convenience enamel based washes and a couple of combinations of different colors. And then I think I've settled in on something that's going to work. So it's looking pretty good.
Quick question. The VMS ballast freeze. You and I both bought that from VMS. I haven't had a chance to use it yet. I think this is your first experimentation with it. What was your initial impression?
It works like it's advertised.
Well, that's good.
It really penetrates the aggregate really quick and really thorough. The downside of the product is it dries with a glossy sheen to it, and I don't like that part of it. I don't know how big a deal that is. In this case, it's probably not, because I'll flat finish dead flat this anyway.
Right.
So I'm not too concerned about it. But I did another little experiment. I took their matte varnish and I diluted it out with a little bit of Vallejo Airbrush Flow Improver.
Gotcha.
Actually, it was the Vallejo matte varnish I did this with. I kept the paint and the dilutant the same brand, just so I wouldn't have that issue to deal with. And as far as a wetting and gluing agent, that worked almost the same as the VMS sand and ballast freeze, but it did not dry glossy.
Hmm.
That's something else I want to play with a little more. Kind of did the same thing. It penetrates down and wets, but when it dries, there's no glossy sheen if you use a wetted out matte varnish. Now I bet you could use about any acrylic matte varnish and about any acrylic flow improver, like the Liquitex flow improver. Yeah, I think the Liquitex flow improver would probably work as well.
And probably work with almost any company's matte acrylic matte varnish.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. So if you don't want to deal with the glossiness, that might be an avenue.
Well, and that just eliminates have something by doing it with, instead of with the VMS, doing it with the matte varnish and the flow improver, it just eliminates something that you've got to go back and deal with.
Right. So there's some options there. Folks want to play around and find their own mix. I've got the VMS varnishes. So,
yeah.
And I've got these flow additives as well on hand. So I can do it however I want it now.
Well, your hat tip to your friend and mine, Steve Husted, who we're going to see up at HeritageCon along with Mark Copeland, because Steve's motto is experiment, experiment, experiment. And I think he was very proud of you for having concocted that giant experiment with seven different washes.
It got me to where I wanted to be without having to break something. So
yeah,
that's the whole point. That's the bottom line. That's the secret sauce in doing it that way.
Mike, have you been spending any money on model? Well, I know you are going to be spending money on modeling because we're going to HeritageCon. And one of the great things about HeritageCon is they have a really great vendors area. So I'm sure both you and I are going to damage our modeling budgets that way. But have you pre-damaged your modeling budget over the past month?
Unfortunately, yes, I have.
Oh, well, let's not say unfortunate. Let's not be judgmental. Let's not say unfortunately.
I can judge myself.
So what kind of damage have you done?
Well, the first two revolve around this railroad ballast deal. Of course, I've already mentioned it. The ballast was something I've bought since last time. I think I may have ordered it last time. It hadn't arrived yet. So
right.
Just to mention that again, it was a ballast and it wasn't very expensive. I think for $12 shipped, I got way more than I'll ever use.
I was going to say, you're buying tiny rock. I would hope it's not very expensive.
I would too. Though there might be a good expense at getting it that small. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Not in the rock crushing business. And then kind of as an aside to that, I ordered both a black and brown acrylic wash from Monument Hobby, who are an outfit that does paints and shaders and washes and all that great stuff, kind of in the vein that Citadel does.
Right.
aimed at mostly primarily figure painters of all ilk, you know, gaming figure painters or more traditional miniatures and busts, that kind of thing. Stephen Lee had blogged about these, so I was curious. Now, they worked well for the kind of thing I was doing with them for this ballast, but I still have to get around and see if I have similar results that Steve had when he tried them out. So if you want to see more about them, you can go to Monument Hobbies website. And you can see them and buy them there. There may be some information on their use there. I don't remember, but Steve's got a blog post about it at Sprue Pie with Frets. If you want to read about it, you know, I've just got this thing that, I don't have it. It's kind of a universal opinion among scale modelers that most of these acrylic washes just don't work that well.
Right. As compared to an oil-based
wash. An oil-based wash, yeah. And that's just been my experience and experienced a lot of other people as well. So Monument Hobby acrylic washes, according to Steve, we're offering something a little bit closer to what we're used to with the solvent-based washes. I don't know yet. I've got them in hand, and stay tuned, folks. I'll get into that a little later down the road. In addition to those two things, I kind of revisited my old T-70 light tank project. I was looking at that the other day, and the mini art kits, one of their earlier kits, mm-hmm. and it's got some issues. So from Metallic Models in the Ukraine via eBay, I bought their T-70 replacement wheels. Mm-hmm. It replaces the idler and all the road wheels, primarily because the mini art kit doesn't have any rim detail on it.
Mm-hmm.
It goes right from the hub to the tire with no visible rim. These wheels fix that. And then also ordered from Metallic Models, their T-70 replacement turret. The kit turret is symmetrical down the center line. It shouldn't be. The real tank had a really obvious asymmetry to its shape because the gun was offset to one side.
Right.
Versus the center point of the turret rotation. So this turret fixes that. The wheels look like they're resin cast from a 3D printed master. So they've got a little bit of lines in them. Not too bad. Detail's good. It's got the rim detail it needs. Other than that, they're nice parts. They're completely usable. Really pleased with the turret as well. You got to graft on a few kit parts onto it as well, but it's a nice little replacement and fixes the primary problem with the kit turret. So,
well, you've had a thing for the T-70 for a long time. It's appeared on your list many times.
It has. It started out as a scratch project.
Yeah.
And I'd done a bunch of 2D CAD work and had the hull plastic parts all ready to cut, send off to a laser cutter or something. I can't remember how I was going to do it, but the T-70 kit came out and I just, you know, got backburnered at that point.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I've purchased since the last time we ran this segment was from Tankograd Publishing.
Yes.
I found a copy of the Soviet B-4, Hammer of God, the book on the Soviet B-4 tracked howitzer. Now, it's like the third hardbound book in their Red Army focus series of books.
Oh, and they are fantastic books.
Yeah, I've come to have high expectations for these books, and this one did not disappoint. I mean, it's unfortunately, it's out of print. I don't know how I missed the release of this book. I guess I was busy learning how to do a podcast because it's about 2020, 2021 when it came out, limited to 500 copies. I don't know if there'll ever be another printing or not, but there's not many of them out there. I tracked one down at Aberdeen Books out in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and got it for a good price. And man, it only took about 3 days to get here, so was real pleased with that.
Well, now, for people who don't know, the B4 is that giant 203, is it 203 millimeter?
Yeah, I think that's right.
203 millimeter howitzer on a tracked carriage. The most famous film of it is the Battle of Berlin, where they've got the thing going down the middle of a street firing over open sights.
Yeah.
And it's just a beast.
Well, there's we talked about it last time in Faves and Yawns. There's a Zvezda kit's coming out with a new plastic one. There's the trumpeter kits out there to be had. And I picked up a barrel for probably the trumpeter kit when we were in Columbus. So,
right.
It's a project I look forward to learning a little bit more about. You know, you see a kit or a model when it's released and you know a little bit about it, but not much. But, you know, there's a couple of major variations of this gun.
Right. They did a short barrel and a long barrel, among other things.
Well, no, that's a completely different caliber weapon.
Oh, is it?
That's 152 millimeter cannon.
Oh, okay.
No, there's an early production series for this gun, and then the more serial production, the later ones that, and coincidentally, the one that was at Aberdeen was a very early production howitzer, and it's at Fort Sill now.
Hmm.
Maybe if I need pictures, Mr. Charvat can help me out with that.
There you go.
Well, what have you been doing, man?
I've been damaging my wallet. Well, let's see. To start with, I ordered off of eBay, but it has not yet arrived. Speaking of real space, Bronco does a kit of, in 72nd scale, of a Chinese launch vehicle. This is apparently the first standard Chinese space launch vehicle, and it's the whole rocket. Bronco has apparently been, you know, they either morphed into Gecko or stopped doing armor kits, or something happened there. But they're now, they seem to be releasing on the regular missile kits, or rocket kits. They did that, what they called the Dongfang 1, which was the improved V-2 that the Soviets built, which NATO calls the SS-2, and which I built and I'm going to take to HeritageCon. So I didn't know this kit was out there. I saw it on ScaleMates, went on eBay. It was available for a very cheap price, and so I bought it, and in fact, it was supposed to be delivered today, but it got misrouted, so I think it's going to show up tomorrow. I purchased, because I got a very good price on it, the Etoleri Stirling 3. I like the short Stirling. The Etoleri kit and anything close to retail is ridiculously expensive. This is not a great kit if you love the Stirling and you really want to build it. You're going to have to do a lot of work because it's not a great kit, but I wanted to add it to the stash, and I did. I bought the Flyhawk SBD-2. I bought the ICM KI-21, the 1A version. I had already previously purchased the 1B version, and then they released the earlier 1A version, so I went ahead and bought it. And then I got a kit that I've got to say really has piqued my interest. I was completely unaware of it until you pointed it out. Flyhawk, in 72nd scale, makes a Soviet BT-7.
Yep.
And the BT-7 is a neat tank. I mean, it's pre-war and early war. I think it was used at Khalkhin Gol. You know, was used obviously in the Finnish War, and was used, it was still in use when Barbarossa happened in 1941. And it's an attractive kit, attractive tank. I've always wanted to go ahead and build one. I was unaware of the fact that Flyhawk had done one until you pointed it out. And then, man, this is an impressive kit.
It is. It really is.
I mean, this is one of those things where you open up the package and you're like, wow, I did not expect this. Now, I have no idea how it builds. Hopefully, I'm going to find that out at some time sooner rather than later. But when you look at the molding and you look at the instructions, this thing is just really, really nice. And I got to say, the fact that it's so nice probably moves it up in my order of build. I don't know if it'll make it into 2024, but it may well make it into 2025 for sure. And then I also went to Scale Reproductions and I bought some Vallejo airbrush thinner, which I use. I found that to be a really good thinner for thinning almost any acrylic paint. It works obviously perfectly with the Vallejo stuff, but I found it to work with the AK Gen 3s. It's a good general acrylic thinner. And I had run out, was at the local hobby shop and picked it up.
Is that all you got?
Yeah, well, that, God, was that not enough? I'm sorry. that was plenty, trust me. Mike, we're here toward the end of the episode. Have you finished up your modeling fluid?
I have. It's just a Guinness pub draft in a can. And, you know, I'm just not going to have to agree with Miss Ruthie.
You didn't like it?
Pub draft in a can in the United States is just a meh. I just do not enjoy it like I used to. I don't know.
Well, she loves Guinness. She's a Guinness girl. There's no doubt. Now, she doesn't like what Guinness calls it, the one where they tried to release an American beer. Obviously, that's a non-starter, but she loves Guinness, so I won't tell her that you it wasn't to your liking.
I mean, it's okay, but it's just not one I'd buy much anymore. I used to buy it a lot, but maybe I wore myself out.
Maybe.
What about you?
Sweetwater Brewing Company Extra Pale Ale 420. It's good. It's not great. It's not anything to write home about. It's not a mass market American beer, but it's kind of close. It has more taste than, it's not a Coors or a Bud or something like that. It's kind of in that family, and thus it's not something I think that I would be drinking on the regular. I tend to like some of the smaller microbrews that have some more distinct flavor to them, but it not awful. I mean, it's not something where I tasted it and spit it out or anything like that. I'll finish it up. Now we're truly at the end of the episode, and all we got left is shout-outs. Do you have some shout-outs, Mike?
I have several, but they're all wrapped up under one umbrella. We've got Earl Richmond, Chuck Doherty, Rob V., Adam Coleman, Paul Pendleton Brown, and Mike Halliday. All these folks, since the last time we ran any names, have chosen to support Plastic Modeled Mojo through their generosity. And we really appreciate it, folks. It really goes a long way to help us out. If you'd like to join the ranks of these gentlemen and help us out here at Plastic Model Mojo, there are a number of ways you can do so. We have a number of avenues for folks to contribute to the show, and to find those, you can go to www.plasticmodelmojo.com. And if you pick up any of the recent episodes, there are links to all the avenues for contribution are in the show notes. Patreon, you can become a Patreon subscriber for a recurring contribution. There's a PayPal link. There's a Buy Me a Coffee link. And of course, as we mentioned earlier in the show, we've got the Plastic Model Mojo merchandise store. And everything purchased there throws a little our way to help further the show. So thanks a lot. We appreciate every penny that's ever been donated to us. It's really helping us out a lot. Thank you.
Yes, I want to second that. Thank you all very much. We appreciate the support that you've given us. And as Mike says, it really, really does help. In addition, I would like to shout out the fine people at the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Royal Canadian Border Service, who I'm sure are going to give us no trouble as we cross the border into Canada on Saturday. We salute you, and we look forward to a quick and easy passage.
You got any more, Dave?
One more. A shout out to the guys at HeritageCon. You all put on a great show. We can't wait. Again, I have not been this excited other than for an IPMS USA Nationals. And so y'all do hard work. I know putting on a contest of that size and quality is difficult. Know that all of us who attend the show really, really appreciate it.
Well, Dave, that's it. We need to get on out of here, man.
Absolutely. We need to get packed, ready for travel to Canada.
Well, as we always say,
so many kits,
so little time, Dave, and I will see you Saturday morning, dark and early.
You got it.